Penguin Random House Audio presents The Hollywood Spy, a Maggie Hope Mystery by Susan Elia McNeil. Read for you by Susan Duoden. This book is dedicated to the memory of Leon Lewis, an attorney and disabled American veteran who was gassed during World War I, along with his fellow lawyer Mendel Silberberg and director Joseph Roos, as well as the men and women of the Los Angeles Community Relations Committee of the Jewish Federation Council. They worked to fight Nazism in Los Angeles before and during World War II, at considerable risk to themselves and their families. We will undermine the morale of the people of America. Once there is confusion, and after we have succeeded in undermining the faith of the American people in their own government, a new group will take over. This will be the German-American group, and we will help them assume power. Adolf Hitler, 1933. He knew what those jubilant crowds did not know, but could have learned from books: that the plague bacillus never dies or disappears for good, that it can lie dormant for years and years in furniture and linen chests, that it bides its time in bedrooms, cellars, trunks, and bookshelves, and that perhaps the day would come when, for the bane and the enlightening of men, it would rouse up its rats again and send them forth to die in a happy city. Albert Camus, The Plague. Prologue. It was 1943, and America was at war. In downtown Los Angeles, rainbow-colored neon signs lit up a street flooded with a sea of white hats, as streetcars, buses, and taxis dropped off more and more United States servicemen. Most carried 2x4s or baseball bats, or had pennies sewn into the hems of their neckerchiefs to swing as weapons. A group of Marines sang a raucous, off-key version of Anchors Away. The civilians were waiting. Zoot suiters, mostly Angelenos of Mexican descent, were also dressed for the occasion, wearing the unmistakable broad-shouldered, double-breasted suit jackets and balloon-like pants pegged at the ankles that had become infamous. They too carried bats and 2x4s, as well as switchblades. There was a long moment, sharp as glass, as the two American groups regarded each other. It was momentarily silent as they gripped their weapons with sweaty palms, a poisonous wave of hate moving through them. Someone, somewhere, threw something, and the factions charged, swinging, hitting, stabbing. There was the sickening sound of fists meeting flesh as fighting broke out, seemingly everywhere at once. The streets filled with writhing, grappling, bleeding boys and men intent on short-sighted destruction. The on-duty men of the Los Angeles Police Department were summoned by the general alarm riot. The department was already working at a deficit, having lost their best young officers to the military. Still, nearly 1,000 policemen, uniformed, in plain clothes, on motorcycles, juvenile bureau personnel, and even traffic cops had been tapped to show up. They joined the Navy Shore Patrol and Army Military Police. As the transport pulled to a stop, Detective Abe Finch looked out the window and whistled, long and low. He was tall and angular, with leathery tanned skin, somewhere in his early 40s. He took in the scene of the men fighting, then looked to his partner, Detective Mac Connor. At 38, Mac was short and burly, with receding blonde hair, a ruddy complexion, and the beginnings of a beer belly. His uniform was straining at the buttons.
"I'm too old for this shit," Mac muttered. "My days on the streets are supposed to be over."
Outside, the air was acrid and smoky, filled with shouts and the occasional scream. Abe and Mac joined the police officers at the periphery of the fighting, watching with Navy Shore Patrol and higher-ranked officers as the scene exploded. Marines in dress blues kicked in store windows. Some threw rocks at streetlights, smashing the bulbs to provide darkness for cover. Zoot suiters brandished broken beer and liquor bottles as sailors swung their weighted handkerchiefs.
"Double or nothing on that marine,"
a police captain said, pointing through the crowd to a muscular sailor wielding a switchblade. Abe and Mac watched as men set trash cans on fire, then kicked them over, only to run away, laughing.
"I thought the mayor had declared the city off limits to servicemen," Abe said as he nervously tapped his knocker against his palm,
his face long and somber. Mac grimaced as they watched a mob overturn a dented Ford sedan. Someone threw a lit cigarette, and the car erupted into red and yellow flames.
"Yeah, just like they banned the damn zoot suit."
"I heard on the radio that cab drivers have been picking up soldiers at the USO up in Hollywood, then bringing them down here," Abe said as a taxi pulled up.
Men in civilian clothes, dungarees and suspenders piled out. They carried broken liquor bottles and baseball bats. He rolled his eyes.
"And now we've got goddamn civilians coming in."
Mac's eyes seemed to glow red in the light of the flames.
"This is chaos."
"This is war," Abe corrected him. "And people, innocent people, are going to die."
Mac tightened his grip on his club as he watched shouting men wrestle and shove each other against cars to get in a punch.
"Pachuco's going ape." "How the hell are we supposed to tell the good guys from the bad guys?"
Abe muttered, stunned by the flaming hellscape. He watched, numb, as his partner waded into the mob to join a group of Marines facing down a lone teenager in a zoot suit.
"Hey,"
he called, pushing through the crowd.
"We're supposed to keep the peace, not join in."
With great effort, Abe pulled Mac out of the bloody skirmish.
"You nuts?"
With the streetlights broken, it was impossible to tell who was who in the flickering light of the flames. Both men started, turning as they heard gunshots, then the sound of breaking glass.
"Jesus H. Roosevelt Christ!"
Mac caught sight of a liquor store, the door shattered.
"Come on, they've got guns now."
He ran inside. Abe followed reluctantly.
"I don't mind getting punched," Mac said over his shoulder, "but the wife will kill me if I'm shot."
Grabbing a beer from a cooler, he used his teeth to pop the cap off.
"Let's sit this one out in here, okay, partner?"
He took a swig from the bottle before handing it to Abe, who demurred. Roaming the aisles, they quickly discovered they weren't alone in the store. A group of civilians in t-shirts and dungarees were drinking Virginia Gentlemen straight from the bottle in the back. Their faces were bruised, but not bloody. A handsome man in his 30s, tan and lean, golden hair covered by a Yankees cap, held out a bottle.
"Brothers in arms," he chortled.
He was wearing dark cotton twill pants and a short-sleeved red plaid shirt.
"Come, drink with us."
Abe looked to Mac.
"We gotta get back."
Mac only shook his head and reclaimed the beer bottle, swallowing, then wiping fizzy liquid from his chin.
"Name's Will Whittaker."
The man made a hand gesture that looked like the letter K. On one forearm was a tattoo of a scorpion, and on the other, a cross that appeared to be on fire.
"We came down to help the soldiers, for God, race, and nation. Same as you, I bet."
Outside, there was a deafening explosion and the sound of people screaming. A grizzled police officer yelled from the smashed door.
"Any cops in there? We're evacuating the movie theater. We need manpower."
"Yes, sir."
Abe looked to his partner.
"Mac, they need us. Got civilians in there."
"Probably just a bunch of pachucos,"
Whittaker drawled.
"Why risk your hide for them?"
"Because that's our job, no matter who they are," Abe replied.
"Fewer pachucos in the world might not be such a bad thing. You know what I'm saying?"
Whittaker laughed, and his men did as well. Abe did not. Mac joined in.
"I'm gonna stay here," he told Abe, "with my new friends."
Whittaker saluted him with the bottle, then took a deep swig of bourbon.
"Wise decision, my brother."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?